I'm Jessica Marquardt, and welcome to Kaleidoscope, the Cortical Visual Impairment Podcast. We continue our conversation on the leading cause of pediatric visual impairment in the developed world. Cortical visual impairment, or CVI for short. About 30 to 40% of kids with a visual impairment in the developed world have CVI. My child is among them. So what does CVI mean for these kids? While they can see, this brain-based visual impairment makes it harder for them to process what they see. It's harder for them to interpret the visual world. But because of neuroplasticity, we know that these children have a chance at improving their functional vision when appropriate, intentional interventions are put in place. On to our guests. What I enjoy so much about Gunjan and Jim is that they are so bright and relatable at the same time. Gunjan is a pediatric nurse practitioner. Jim is a project manager in healthcare IT and a former Fulbright scholar. They have three kids, they live in a good school district in Pennsylvania, and have relied on family to help them get through the early years of raising a young daughter and her even younger brothers, twins. They look forward to relaxing, unplugged family vacations, and you can always count on them for a good laugh. Sounds ideal, right? Well, here's their story. Hi, Gunjan. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Jessica.
Thanks for joining me. And especially on a date weekend, no kids, huh?
No problem.
Rare, very rare.
So, hey, is it true? Were you really high school sweethearts?
Ah.
That is true.
I thought I had heard that. How long have you known each other? What age did you meet?
Maybe like 14, like as friends, you know, in school.
And then when did you start dating?
At the snowball dance. 1996 or 7, I can't remember.
But her mom probably thinks we'd started dating a little bit later than that.
Oh, gosh. So is life today anything like you envisioned when you were 16? Or even the day you were married?
Nope.
I mean, we have jobs and we have children. Those were two things we both wanted.
And a golden doodle, too.
So lots of dreams fulfilled, but things are a little different than you anticipated.
Yeah.
We are about to have an in-depth conversation. You have three kids, but we're going to talk about Krish because he has CVI. But most of all, I'm sure he's an amazing, inspiring little human. So can you give us a snapshot of who Krish is?
Krish is a very bubbly, social 6-year-old boy with a twin brother who right now still loves to dance, likes to watch YouTube videos about Mario and Luigi, loves to play with his older sister as well as his twin, and loves to learn.
That's wonderful. He sounds so cool. And he's getting ready to go into kindergarten, right?
Yeah, so we held him and his brother back a year. Although I think so far Krish has been able to keep pace with learning in preschool, he's physically a little bit small. He is failure to thrive. And we thought that giving him an extra year would allow him to learn some of the preschool kindergarten skills before he actually went into kindergarten.
Well, I remember you telling me that last year because I first met the two of you at the American Conference on Pediatric Cortical Visual Impairment in Omaha. And Gunjan, you gave the opening talk, Partners on the Journey, a TVI and Family's Experience from Birth to Age 3, along with your early intervention teacher of the visually impaired, Marianne Roberto. And I have to say, it was a paradigm change for me. Things can go right. Who knew? I mean, I had so many tears that morning. The presentation inspired me to go home and do more for Grace. To all the people listening, if you didn't catch this presentation, you can find it on PerkinsElearning.org under videos. I think it's on the 6th page. And I'm sure Krish has come a long way. So can you tell us about his birth and the diagnoses you knew at the time?
Yeah, I had preeclampsia when I was pregnant, meaning I had acute high blood pressure and I had been on bed rest for a while. And then, you know, my blood pressure spiked. So we decided to have a C-section at that time. And the boys came out. Krish was 1 pound, 6 ounces. So pretty terrifying. Went straight to the NICU. His brother, Rohan, had a very smooth course in the NICU. Overall, basic, typical NICU problems. But Krish ended up being diagnosed with chronic lung disease. He had a breathing tube for a long time. He had a grade 2 intraventricular hemorrhage, which is typical of a 26-weeker, which did resolve over time. But really, his biggest problem in the NICU was his development of chronic lung disease, which otherwise known as BPD, bronchopulmonary dysplasia, which just, you know, when he was discharged, he came home on oxygen. And he did learn to feed by a bottle. So he did a lot of typical baby things. Gross motor development was also way behind, but that's because he was really dependent on trying to grow his lungs and his brain.
Jim, she speaks like a nurse, doesn't she?
She sure does. She uses words I cannot remember or pronounce.
Well, it's so nice that you have that solid foundation from your medical background for the health and developmental perspective, but also it's interesting that you have twins and therefore have a direct comparison.
It's amazing to have a twin to compare him to. I mean, they developed in the same way, we think, in utero, and, you know, were birthed at the same time, but had two completely different NICU courses. And of course, they're two different people now, but his brother, Rohan, did not have the struggles that Krish faced. And especially when we came home and I'm watching Rohan start to develop like a typical newborn into an infant and, you know, start turning to the side and doing the baby things that we want, cooing and smiling. And Krish wasn't doing those things.
Well, I guess the boys are about maybe 5 or 6 months old. And, you know, Rohan's starting to roll over, lift his head. And Krish is kind of like a lump on a log. We would make eye contact with Rohan and Krish would kind of like look right through us. You know, besides Gunjan's medical background to kind of know where kids should be in that sort of development phase. I mean, it was really a benefit to have a twin so we could see kind of firsthand comparison between the two to know that something was wrong really early on.
When did you start having concerns about his vision specifically?
We had physical therapy at home. I called early intervention as soon as Krish came home. We knew he would need help. I mean, I assumed Rohan would need help too, just having been so early. We had a physical therapist who came to the house and, you know, started working with him on basic movement. And then a couple visits in, I told her, it feels like he doesn't look at me. And she looked up at me and said, tell me more. And so I described to her how he looked past me. I would show him toys. He wouldn't look at them and say, look, Rohan's looking at this. And she said, I just attended a vision in service about something called CVI that babies have. How about we get a vision consult for Krish? And I was like, sure, why not? I want him to have all the help he needs. Meanwhile, I had no idea what CVI was or what it could mean.
So then what happened and how did you go about investigating?
So I got a phone call from Mary and Roberta, who would then become our EI vision specialist. And she asked me these questions. It was like she was reading off a list and she said, does he look at fans? Does he look at bright lights? Does he look at you? And I literally, my answer to everything was no, he doesn't look at anything. He doesn't look at lights. He doesn't look at fans. And the more questions she asked me, the more confused I was because I didn't know where this list of questions was coming from. And I was having this realization of, wait, he's not doing any of these developmental things, like none of these things. I didn't realize the profoundness of his developmental delay at that time. You know, she asked me these questions and she came out and saw him. I guess he was about 5, 6 months old. I mean, he was asleep the whole time. I mean, he really, all he did was sleep the first probably 9 months of his life. I mean, he woke up and ate, but he really just slept. You know, the evaluation that Marianne did wasn't really about evaluating Krish. It was about interviewing me. And, you know, she came back after that. And after that, she suspected in her mind all along that he could have CVI. You know, I was open to getting the services. I didn't understand it. And at that time, you know, I Googled it. And this is almost six years ago now. There wasn't very much information on the internet. What I could find was confusing for me. And I had, as a nurse and nurse practitioner, taking care of children for the last probably 10 years prior to this, and I had never heard of this diagnosis, CVI. And so I did what every other parent would do. I denied it, even though I was open to having Marianne come in and see Krish and do whatever a vision teacher does, because I also didn't know what a vision teacher was. I, at the same time, because I couldn't find a lot of information on the internet and I had never learned about it in my formal education, said, this has got to be some made up thing, or this can't be a real diagnosis, or what does this vision teacher know what she's talking about? It took Marianne coming and being persistent and being encouraging, and also for her coming to ophthalmology visits with us, developmental optometrist visit with us, neuro-ophthalmologist visit. She went way beyond what I think a typical TBI could be expected to do until we understood and we were comfortable as a family to understand what CVI is and how it was going to impact Krish.
That's so dedicated. She had mentioned to me once that the reason Krish had made so much progress is because the two of you had faith that he could. Even when you maybe didn't understand CVI to its fullest, or maybe what you were doing and how it would help. And Marianne was learning too. So she said that what drove her to learn was this need to stay ahead of a bright, bright kid. It's a real testament to the two of you. Jim, how did you feel and come to terms with the fact that Krish might have CVI?
Well, I mean, in general, I'm a pretty positive person, so I like to kind of focus on what can be done to sort of improve the situation. So I went from, I mean, literally almost fainting in the operating room when the boys were born, and I heard their weights, because it was my job to name them. And when I heard their weights, I almost fainted. I couldn't handle that. And then...
Wait, tell her how Krish got his name.
Well... you know, the Krishna, the Hindu god, we figured that he would need all the help he could get. So we knew that we wanted one to be named Rohan and one to be named Krish. And so since Krish was the 1 pound, 6 ounce one versus his brother, who was a heftier 1 pound, 13 ounces, we decided to, you know, give Krish his name.
Why were you responsible for naming them?
Well, I think it was all the magnesium that Gunj was on and those other meds that were kind of knocked her out.
Gotcha.
But we figured he needed God the most, so.
I think part of what was sort of the aha moment for me was kind of seeing how those early intervention techniques from Marianne with the sort of the slinkies and the lights and the aluminum foil, we started seeing Krish respond to those things, whereas before he hadn't responded to anything. And I mean, that was like extremely motivating, I think, for us, since, you know, we spent every moment with, you know, with Krish. So I think it was probably less so for our parents. Our parents kind of were in still sort of seeing things through rose-colored glasses, you know, oh, he's going to be fine. Whereas we kind of decided to focus on, okay, we're going to do everything we possibly can to make sure that he's fine. We're not going to just assume he's going to be fine. And we really took all of Marianne's advice and just tried to do everything that she recommended, because we saw real progress. It's been a really long road since phase one.
I love it. I have chills. So you went from almost fainting to quickly pivoting to what can we do?
We were gung-ho to try to do everything all the time. And as I said earlier, he slept for the first 9 months of his life. So one thing we learned is that you have to balance therapy with life and with being a baby and with having two other kids and the golden doodle, of course, and with having moved in with my mom so that we could get extra help. So we were trying to balance all these things, and, you know, we just had to accept that we were doing our best. So I took a year off of work, which, you know, I was lucky that I was able to do. And when Jim would come home from work in the evening, Marianne had suggested sit in a dark room or close the curtains. Naina at that time was 2.5. Give her a toy to play with next to us and, you know, put the light box on for Krish and let's just give him a chance to see what he can do. So we did that evening after evening, and it still felt like it wasn't enough. But the fact is, if you look at from the outside, you know, that's when he started making progress little bit by little bit.
What else did you do to integrate those types of strategies into your daily routines?
I think we did the typical, like, had red shiny ribbons on the stroller. We had a red fire truck that I remember. It's like a play school brand fire truck that you would give to any kid. We took that fire truck with us everywhere. And it was kind of almost like to orient him. He mouthed things for the first almost 2 years of his life. So he mouthed that fire truck too, but it was a familiar thing for him to feel that fire truck in his hand and have that in his mouth. So that would be an example. I mean, we had Mylar balloons tied to things, you know, the play set. We had a normal one for Rohan, and then we had Krish's wrapped in Christmas lights and tinfoil with mirrors all around it. I mean, a lot of the stuff, you know, was from the dollar store we had lying around the house. I even bought him a pot holder. It was a rubber kind of plastic pot holder, and we strung it from a string of beads that we hung on his stroller so that he could put it in his hands and feel it. And he also mouthed that. So it was just red and he liked the color red, and he liked shiny. So we just used shiny red things mostly.
Did anyone ever ask you about the potholder in public?
Not that I recall, but we got stopped all the time because I had twins and we had this long twin stroller. People always wanted to talk to us because we would maybe go to the mall during the day. So there's a lot of older people out and they're so happy to see a young family. And what I really frequently got was, oh, he must be shy, or oh, he must be sleepy, when they looked at Krish. And this is probably all before 1 year of age. I didn't know how to tell them, no, he just doesn't see you.
Right.
I mean, he had no response on his face. These people would come and you would see Rohan have a response, whether he was smiling or crying. And Krish just didn't. Very rarely did I tell people at that time what was really going on with him, because I didn't have the words to explain it.
If you had had the words to explain it, because you probably do now, what would you say?
I would say he's able to see things, but he has to learn to see them. And faces are especially hard for him. So if you want him to know that you're here, you can touch his hand and talk to him and give him some time to look at you.
That's good.
Although that being said, I didn't want those people to touch my baby. I actually could do the preemie. But if I had some hand sanitizer and could have squeezed it on their hands.
That's right. People mean well, but it is funny how bold they are with their questions.
Yeah. One time when they were probably a little older and they weren't with me, but I made a friend sitting at Nana's dance class. I thought she could be a friend. And we started talking and I told her about the boys, and it's a pretty intense story for me to tell about their birth and what they went through. And when I meet someone who wants to hear it or seems like they want to hear it, I share it, but it takes a lot out of me to tell the story. And this woman stopped me and said, I can't hear any more of this. And I said, what? She said, this is just too much for me to take. Please don't tell me anymore. And I was like,
oh my,
speechless, first of all, because if I've learned anything from my experience with CVI or special needs kids or the people I've met through CVI, is that empathy and sympathy are what get us through the day, especially the first 3 years of the boys' lives. We depended on other people's empathy to make it to the end of the day because it was so much work.
Yeah, I hear you. Jim, did you have any experiences, positive or negative?
I mean, we had a lot of help from our parents. I mean, as Gunjan mentioned, we moved in with her mom after the boys were born. So she was there a lot to give us support. And that was really, you know, instrumental in us not going crazy. And then, you know, my parents, as I got closer to retirement age, you know, they were able to kind of help take Nana, our daughter, so we could have some breaks here and there. So I think even though they didn't understand exactly what CVI was, at least they could sense when we kind of needed a little bit of help to take a break or to have time, you know, with Krish to do the interventions and things like that. So I think that was really valuable.
Well, we also, I mean, our kids never went to daycare, but it was really because we didn't have a choice. There was no way with Krish's chronic lung disease that it would be healthy for him to be in a daycare situation. So like I said, that I had taken off, but we were dependent on our family to watch our kids when I did return to work. We were really lucky. I mean, family, we have a small family, but they were instrumental, really, our parents and an aunt who watched the kids for us and then therefore learned them and loved them. So we could ask them to, you know, tie the balloon onto Krish's hand and they would do it because they wanted the best for him. Even if they didn't understand CVI, they wanted him to succeed. So whereas I don't think we could have necessarily gotten that experience in a daycare setting. I'd also say that there was a family member that we told the diagnosis to and tried to share the information. And her response was, oh, I understand what you mean. My daughter has scoliosis and her scoliosis will affect her whole life. But as long as she's okay with it, I'm okay with it. And I was, once again, speechless, which I very rarely am, because I thought, how in the heck does scoliosis compare to a diagnosis of a lifelong visual impairment? I'm speechless. So I think what I've learned is you really have to choose your words wisely of who you're going to share your story with.
I don't know if you've ever read anything by Brené Brown, but she talks about vulnerability and getting comfortable with sharing your story, even if it hurts and takes a lot out of you. But you only do that with the people who have earned it.
That's great advice. And I know that now, but I didn't know that.
Well, and it's hard to determine who that is. So I want to hear about how Krish moved from phase one to phase three in 2.5 years. That's faster than average, according to Dr. Roman's research, which states that it takes an average of 3.7 years to move from phase one to phase three. Can you tell us about his first experience being assessed on the CVI range and maybe even why it's essential to have a score?
Well, Marianne was the first person to assess Krish on the CVI range, and he was about 6 months old. But we know the CVI range is really meant for 9 months plus, so she did kind of a modified version of it. But at that time, like I said, I was kind of in denial. And even though what Marianne was sharing with us really did make sense, I continued to be in denial because I felt like we needed a diagnosis from a medical provider, which Marianne agreed we needed a diagnosis. So we went to the people I listed earlier, the developmental optometrist, the ophthalmologist, the neuro-ophthalmologist, and nobody, the developmental pediatrician, nobody really agreed with us that this was his diagnosis. Or they really, what they said was it's delayed visual maturation and it's because he has global developmental delay or that he has gross motor delay and we just needed time, time, time. And what I understood about anything was that the concept of neuroplasticity and the formation of neurons and pruning, and I do understand that. And I understood that we had to get started to improve Krish's outcome. We did make an appointment to see Dr. Roman in Pittsburgh. One of the things that we're lucky about is we live in Pennsylvania, so we can access Dr. Roman, I mean, if we needed to. And so we were able to get an appointment with her. And I think I felt like when we saw her, I could really know for sure that he had CVI. And so we went to Dr. Roman. And Jim, do you want to talk more about that, the first time we went to Pittsburgh?
Yeah, sure. So I think for me, that was like a transformative moment because it was Dr. Roman, it was her husband, Dr. Alan Lancey. They did, you know, sort of the, you know, interview part first and sort of asking us questions. And I mean, I'll never forget. So I guess for the first trip, you know, she had Krish sit in the high chair and had like a black sort of covering in front of him and had his binky because his binky was one of his things he loved the most and could recognize. But then she put sort of this multicolored complex background on the in front of him on the top of the high chair and put his binky there and he couldn't see it. And then when she took away the complex background and put it on a black background, a very simple background, he picked it up immediately. And for me, I was like, oh, this makes sense now. This just, something just clicked. And even though, you know, we had been kind of following Marianne's recommendations before, it kind of took, it was like that moment was like a significant moment that was really inspiring and motivating. So we just took everything Dr. Roman said, and she jokes with me that I take lots of notes. I mean, I probably have 10 pages of notes from each time we visit her. Just want to try and capture everything she's saying so we can absorb it and follow it. So that's my recollection of my first visit.
Did you ever doubt you were doing the right things, or were you confused about why you were doing those things?
I mean, one thing that Marianne taught us was this concept of being kind of satisfied with the current progress, but always asking what's next? What's next? Okay, we did that. He did that. Great. What's next? And I think she really instilled that kind of way of thinking with us. So we would never kind of be complacent with where we were. We were always thinking, okay, what's the next thing we should focus on?
My daughter Grace is in phase two, and you sometimes hear the phrase stuck in phase two. I guess progress can feel slow at that point. So I'm wondering, was once Krish was in phase two, did his progress ever stall, or how did you help to up the ante to get him to phase three?
I mean, he had short periods of time where his visual development stalled, but we kind of just called them humps, as if he were, maybe it was a period of time he was growing a lot or eating a lot or sleeping a lot. You know, he didn't speak until he was probably close to three. I mean, he tried to talk, but he didn't really speak until he was three. So he was working on speech simultaneously. He started walking close to 2 years old. So he was doing a lot of things simultaneous in development. So sometimes he did not develop his vision as quickly as we expected or would have liked, but then he got it. He just has this ability to catch on to things very quickly. And so I'm thankful that, I mean, or whatever brain damage that he has suffered maybe didn't affect his memory, because he can remember and memorize things quicker than my typical children. So he did have bumps in the road, and we would really just explain it to Marianne, or we would talk with Dr. Roman to say, how do we get past this? And we always got past it.
But I've noticed that too with Grace. Her memory is off the charts. So even though she has brain damage, she's compensating in ways that really help her. And probably Krish also, since he was so young, had maximum neuroplasticity to work with. And that's a real gift.
I think that's really, truly what was in Krish's favor, is that we got started with the CVI interventions at such a young age. I mean, I'm talking about 6 months old that we started, and we had access to an appropriately trained teacher because Marianne had studied under Dr. Roman. And then we had access to Dr. Roman. We had an ophthalmologist who, although she said she didn't know much about CVI, she was happy to, you know, support the diagnosis, because she knew it would help us get the right services for Krish. So we had a lot of things that came out in our favor. In addition, Marianne was able to see Krish once a week. And then as he got older and was able to use his vision better, we were able to increase his vision service time. So we really didn't have any of those hindrances that some other people have.
Yeah, you had luck of the zip code, you know? And you're highly motivated as well, and we're able to jump in feet first. But that's not to say it was easy. Everything you've been through has been really hard. And I'm sure you've had your own IEP debacles and other things that have been really challenging. No parents enjoy those meetings. I think it's almost mandatory to have a drink afterward.
I mean, I would just say that we kind of made it seem like it wasn't that difficult a road to go from, you know, phase one to phase three. But really, I think one of the most challenging things we've went through, and this kind of ties into your IEP question, is every time we had to transition from one thing to another. So for example, from early intervention to intermediate services, and now most recently from, you know, from the regular IU, like 3 to 5 age, to kindergarten services, those have been extremely challenging situations, where, you know, we had to really work hard to make sure the IEP had everything in it that Krish would need to be successful. And I think in the first IEP sort of transition from earlier intervention to the intermediate unit services, or we didn't sign the no rep because, you know, there were some things in there that we felt were not represented. So like, Krish didn't say that Krish would have a TVI that had sufficient expertise in CVI, for example. When the vision teacher at the time performed the range, that there was no interview component, there was things missing. Like it wasn't sort of the 3-point check, you know, where you have parent interview, you have observation, and you actually do the range. There was elements of that were missing, and so we kind of had to fight. We hired an advocate to come with us to the meeting. We came really with a full team of people to kind of be in our corner and give us support in order to get through that process.
You really do have to bring a team together. Sometimes I call it an advisory board, a group that you can bounce things off of, or who are willing to be there in person to speak up on your behalf. I mean, it's really intimidating to walk into a meeting full of people from the school who have their processes, and these are processes that you may not fully understand. Do either of you ever attend the meetings solo, or do you always go together?
Oh, we always go together, and we never go alone, meaning an advocate or a TBI or somebody we trust. It's just sad that parents and families have to be the person to fight for their children. The assumption should be that everyone wants the best thing for the child, but that's not true. Like you said, they have a lot of processes and a lot of things that the school district has to follow, or that the IU has to follow. And we don't know those things. And that's, you know, the purpose of an advocate. But it's so easy as a parent to say, don't you see that this is the best thing for my child? And so easy for them to say, well, don't you see the law doesn't tell me I have to give your best child the best thing. I just have to give them the appropriate.
Right. You're not entitled to a Cadillac.
Correct. Although I have to say, I had said, you know, we had mentioned we lived with my mom for the first year. We ended up moving to purposely to a school district that we knew was a good school district and that had financial resources. So that was a life, you know, that was a choice we made for our family to move to a place. I mean, it's still close to, you know, enough to our families for help, but we knew that that was something that mattered. It matters if your school district has resources to provide. It matters if they, you know, have good special ed programs. So that was part of what we chose to begin with, to live in a place that would hopefully maximize our ability to get good services. And in the end, that did work out in our favor.
Yeah, congratulations on a CVI-rich IEP to support Christian kindergarten. It sounds like he has a pretty solid plan.
It's a really solid plan, but it's like what makes this plan work is things that you can't quantify. It's people who made it work. So it was having, you know, Marianne, who's no longer Krish's teacher, in the background to, like you said, bounce ideas off of. It was having Krish's current TBI, Joy Wilson, who knows him, who's the one who's begun to teach him to read, who is so personally vested in seeing him succeed that she goes beyond the call of duty as a TBI. She has taken upon herself to take extra courses, for example, at Perkins and attend a PCVI conference. These are things that you cannot quantify or that you cannot put in an IEP. The quality of people who are on your child's case makes a huge difference. And that's something as a parent that is very frustrating because you cannot control, because an IEP is written to be followed by anyone, not necessarily the best teacher that you think exists.
Or even the one who has the most CVI knowledge, which becomes incredibly important when it comes to implementing the goals. Because unless you understand the background behind them, the principle of why the goal is there, how it's written, why the supports are there, it becomes really difficult to address that child's needs.
I mean, what you need are smart people who are open-minded, willing to learn about a diagnosis they're not familiar with, willing to accept a child into their school. For example, our new future principal has already, or we've already scheduled a, you know, 4-hour block of CVI specific training for the any teacher in the school who wants to attend, who's going to be part of Krish's team next year, which is, I can't ask for anything more. You know, will the IEP be implemented 100%? We'll find out when school starts, but I have to trust that these are good people and that they're trying to do the best for Krish.
Can you give people listening a sense for what makes a CVI-rich plan with some examples from Krish's IEP in terms of goals, supports? You know, what's written into his IEP that makes it appropriate for a child with CVI, specifically in his phase?
Krish is in phase 3, and he is so far cognitively on par with other 5 to 6-year-olds entering kindergarten. So he has a long list of SDIs, specially designed instructions, that are supposed to be made across the board. So whatever, whether it's his kindergarten teacher or whether he's in gym class or art class, things to make the learning environment and school environment accessible to him. So his SDIs, for example, would be child doesn't need, he also has a diagnosis of mild hypotonic CP. So he walks, talks, plays, runs, but he has difficulty with fine motor skills. So one thing that we've learned through Dr. Roman was the concept of the visual battery. And so to conserve the visual battery, don't do tasks that are very fatiguing. So cutting is very hard for Krish because it takes so much fine motor energy as well as visual energy. So it's written into his SDI that allow him a chance, an opportunity to cut a few snips, and then it should be presented to him already cut out to do the task at hand so that he learns the thing that you want him to learn. We don't need to teach him how to cut. We need to teach him, you know, if you're cutting the letter A, what does a letter A mean? What does a letter A look like by using salient feature language?
Yeah, I think that's important. What's the goal of the lesson and getting at it that way?
Correct.
Maybe it requires thinking out of the box and not going through step 1, step 2, step 3 in the same way that other children do. But as long as he learns the lessons and captures the material, then that's what we're after.
Exactly.
Jim, were you going to say something?
Oh, yeah. I'm just going to add, I mean, besides the long list of SDIs that are in the IEP, we also worked with Joy Wilson and Marianne and some others in the TBI community to kind of review it. Dr. Roman included to review to make sure that each of the goals adequately represented CBI. And then we also incorporated a CBI schedule into the IEP as well. That's sort of a way to kind of encapsulate the day, all the activities that would happen in a day, you know, circle time, tabletop activities, how to handle travel situations in between, you know, classroom activities or the lunchroom, for example, and the specific CBI adaptations that you would incorporate into those activities. In the morning when Chris has to hang his jacket up, since his preferred color is pink, the adaptation would be to kind of highlight his name where his, you know, where his jacket goes in pink, for example. The reason that the CBI schedule is so effective in my mind is it's like a one-page document that's very practical that, you know, anyone who's working with, if there's a substitute teacher that day, or, you know, he's going to have an assistant in the class as well to sort of help with kind of prepping activities and things like that. So it's just a quick reference guide. It's a reminder of what CBI adaptation should be made for that situation or that learning experience.
Thanks for describing that. Yeah, it's a nice tool, an essential tool, really. What's being done to accommodate for complexity for Krish?
Right now, he's in like a typical preschool classroom. And to be honest, it's very noisy and he does get overwhelmed by the noise. So he has noise-canceling headphones that he can put on if he needs to. They have covered some of the walls with like kind of a solid colored fabric so that if he's facing that, it will be less complex of a background to look at. One thing that we started new this year was having a one-to-one paraprofessional. And at first, we were resistant to that because we don't want him to be viewed as different from other kids in the class. But at the same time, we realized that without the paraprofessional, he was getting disoriented as to like where to travel to in class or to independently get his light box out and put a worksheet on a light box. So the paraprofessional has made a huge difference in, I think, providing him confidence and in adapting materials, for example, photographing pages of the book the teacher's reading and putting it on an iPad and having him right in front of him. So his complexity has been decreased because now he has access to an iPad in front of him versus having to look 8 feet to it circle time to the teacher in the front of the classroom.
Has he made friends in preschool? Is social interaction coming easily to him?
No, he's Mr. Mayor. I mean, he loves to talk. He loves people. He really likes adults the most, I think, because he has so much experience with therapists and adults are more predictable. So one of the things he'll do at like gym time at preschool right now is he'll sit in one of those yellow and red kind of cars, the ones that you move your feet, the Fred Flintstone car that little kids have. His TBI noticed that he'll get into that because it kind of keeps him safe from all the kids who are running around and throwing balls, but it allows him to still move around the gym and explore in the comfort of his own little cozy coop. So
we have two of those in our house. That is not an indoor toy. We have a pink one and a red one, and the girls go round and round in circles. I finally convinced Dan that it can't be in the house anymore. It's tearing up the wood floors, but the kids love them, even when they're way too tall to be in them. I guess it just comes down to who doesn't want to drive.
Exactly. No, I mean, really, I don't blame him. Yeah, no, I mean, it's fun. But, you know, I think he finds ways to compensate when he's overwhelmed by the other kids, or he'll say they're too loud. But in general, he is happy to be with the other kids, and he does understand socially what it means to be in a classroom. So I'll tell you a secret about Krish is that he still sucks on a binky. And yes, the medical provider side of me is horrified by that, as well as the germ side. But it's something that he uses as a tool to calm him down. And what's really important to know about this is he knows when it's okay to put that in his mouth and when it's not. Maybe we're going for a long car ride and I could tell he's tired and he's using his finger to curl the front part of his hair because that's one of his cues that he's fatigued. And he'll stick the binky in his mouth. As soon as the car minivan car door opens and we're at our destination, he'll pop it right out of his mouth, stick it in the seat, or say, "Mommy, put this in your pocket. Keep it safe." So he knows he has a social understanding that it's not appropriate for a six-year-old to have a binky. But at the same time, me as his mom knows that it's something that can sometimes prevent him from having a CVI meltdown.
Right. Do you have any good CVI meltdown stories to share on him?
Do you have any, Jim?
Well, I think we're lucky he hasn't really had one in a classroom situation yet. I mean, he has them frequently at breakfast time for some reason. I don't know if that's just a time of day thing, but I mean, for example, if, you know, he gets these little circle pancakes and if one of them has a little flake or something that's out of place, it, for some reason, it bothers him and he just starts having a reaction to that. I mean, I don't really have a good meltdown story.
Well, it sounds like you've put a lot of things into place to help him avoid those.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely has meltdowns. Some of them are typical of probably any kid his age, but we're very aware. So if we go to do an activity outside, he has to have sunglasses or a hat on because the sun makes him tired. If we're going out on a family day, for example, we still bring a stroller. He's six, but I mean, he has a stroller to sit down and rest. We don't do anything for too long as a family because he'll be too tired. We have a lot of things in place to try to conserve his visual battery.
How do his siblings help him along?
They love him. They know something is different about his vision. They know that he has teachers and helpers. They will help him cross the street. His twin Rohan is now, you know, at six, allowed to walk down the street in the cul-de-sac where we live. And he's allowed to, you know, knock for a friend. But I don't feel comfortable sending Krish by himself because if a car was pulling out of the driveway, he wouldn't be able to react fast enough or pick that up. Or he's not allowed to ride his bike in the street because, well, I mean, first of all, he can't really ride a bike, but he can ride a tricycle. And he's so little and so low to the ground, I'm afraid nobody would see him. His sister and his brother know that they have to go with him or be with him all the time. But I'll tell you, they step up to the task beyond what I could have ever expected. Both Naina and Rohan are better children for having Krish as their brother. And one of the things that makes me feel happy in my heart when I think about Krish's future, because as a parent of a child with special needs or of a child that you're not sure what they're going to be capable of, you worry about their future. And I hope for him that he'll one day be able to find, you know, a companion to love and live with. But I don't know what his future holds. So anyway, him having a twin brother is just so meaningful because he has a built-in playmate. He has someone, you know, when he's old enough to drive, my assumption is he may not be able to drive, you know, until these self-driving cars figure themselves out. So he'll have a brother to drive him to school. And I know it's a lot to put on Rohan, but, you know, such is our situation in life. And so his siblings are really his greatest motivating reason for wanting to learn more.
So you mentioned how Krish's siblings really help him along in such a wonderful way. But how do the two of you help each other along? I mean, it's not lost on me that couples who have a child with special needs or have children who are twins, you know, the divorce rate goes up. I mean, that's just a statistic. What do y'all do to keep your relationship strong and make sure that you're able to kind of weather the ups and downs?
I mean, I have a personal belief that you know, when something is difficult in your life, you either grow together or you grow apart. And that's a choice that you make. And we chose to grow together. And we're both very practical people. And we feel like if you do what is meant to be done or what needs to be done, then you'll be successful in the end. We're both optimistic and positive. We both think family is important. You know, we're both willing to sacrifice. You know, we made agreements. We fight about money the same as anybody else does and, you know, fight about who's going to fold the laundry. But, you know, when you've had a child in a life or death situation, like Krish was when he was first born for the first really 6 months of his life, everything for me is relative to our child who could have died. So there's really not much that could happen to us that could make things any worse for us because we've lived through what it feels like to have a child be so you know, ill and on the brink. And once you see your child start thriving and you're working together to bring that child to that place, we've grown together.
It's like the ultimate example of team and that your philosophies jive really helps. Jim, do you have anything you want to add?
Well, that was very well said. I guess I would just add that we really are united in our goal to make sure that Krish has everything he needs to be to live up to his full potential. I think because of that, because we're on the same page, it allows us to kind of weather the storm when there's challenging moments. You know, take the time to laugh when funny things happen related to Krish's visual impairment and sort of his interactions with his siblings, and just kind of just keep moving forward. Also, it helps to have a glass of red wine every night.
Absolutely.
It also helps that we go on vacation a lot. And by a lot, you know, maybe twice a year, but we think it's really important to take time away from therapy, away from school, away from phones and work, where we're just with each other and with the kids, just being as normal a family as we can be.
Yeah, that quality time and relaxation is incredibly key. Jim, you had mentioned that you both are united in wanting to do anything that you can to help Krish reach his full potential. So what does full potential mean to you in this case? What do you envision for him in elementary school or beyond?
I mean, I would say we fully expect Krish to be an academic learner who is able to, you know, have a real job, have, you know, succeed in life, who's going to have challenges, of course, you know, every day. But we want him to learn sort of how to adapt to those challenges, you know, use strategies to be able to compensate, you know, for what his brain damage is going to cause for him to have, you know, have challenges. So it's not going to be an easy road, but I think we fully expect that he's going to be able to thrive, academically speaking and socially speaking, if we're able to maintain sort of a high standard for him and a high standard for the team that is supporting him. So I think we're prepared to keep, you know, keep fighting when we have to and just keep trying as hard as we can to help him achieve that level.
Gunjan, do you have anything else?
I used to cry. I still do, but I cried a lot more in the first 3 years of Krish's life because I was like, is he going to see? Is he going to walk? Is he going to talk? And amazingly, he has met and now exceeded all of those questions that I had for him. So I think I'm just going to continue asking these questions, like, will he go to college? Will he be able to work and live independently, and hope that, like the questions before him, he will just surpass them? And so I think if I just keep thinking that with all the supports in place, that hopefully he'll be able to do it with these higher level things.
I love it. Thanks for talking to me. There's so much strength here, wisdom. I love your story.
When I heard Krish's story for the first time, about the positive outcomes of early detection and appropriate interventions based on CVI principles, I wondered, why can't every child have this experience? To the field of vision educators and rehabilitators, thank you for the times you've detected kids with CVI and provided appropriate, specialized supports and instruction. In these cases, you've transformed a life. This is remarkable. In a recent note, Gunjan said to me, I shudder to think about an alternative educational path for my son. I'm one of the lucky ones. From the start, I had access to a TVI who used the CVI range as the functional vision assessment. Because of this, from the start, our goal was to improve his vision. We wanted him to use his vision as a primary sense for the majority of the time because he needed to learn to see. Kids with CVI can learn to see. Krish's interventions relied minimally on tactile or auditory senses. He needed to use his energy to develop a schema for vision in his brain to strengthen his visual processing. Of course, some children do benefit from building the tactile sense, from receiving pre-Braille instruction. But we're talking about Krish, who, because of strategies recommended based on his CVI range score, now has visual and intellectual curiosity, asking questions like, "Where's that dog's tail?" referring to a boxer with a docked tail. It took energy, it took intention, it took determination. They used salient features and comparative language. They describe and they look, all to support Krish's ability to interpret the world around him. Gunjan goes on to say, I know what research-based means. I know scientists and researchers and TVIs want the CVI range to be wrapped up in a tidy package. But CVI doesn't fit cleanly into a package. Some say it gives false hope. We say it gives us knowledge, and knowledge is power. If Gungeon and Jim had assumed that Krish would never see, if they had made assumptions about how delayed his cognition would be based on his delayed physical development, where would he be now? His parents had high expectations, and now Krish has limitless possibilities. We believe that children with cortical visual impairment have a right to visual access and educational and social inclusion. I bet you do too. Join the movement. Find Start Seeing CVI Advocacy on Facebook. Thanks, y'all.